Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Starting Line podcast with me, Rich Lee. It's an interview podcast where we talk to incredible people and find out why they are who they are. Today's a funny one because Christian, you'll have seen his name hopefully on the episode, Christian Leroy Duncan, is a professional mixed martial artist. He fights in the UFC and he is from our hometown of Gloucester. Christian has said to me a number of times, man, I don't know why you invited me onto this podcast. Look at the guest list. And that just speaks to the humility and the kind of guy that Christian is. Now, Christian was the middleweight champion of Cage Warriors. And if the UFC is the Champions League, Cage Warriors is the Premier League. So he's a middleweight champ, defended his title and was undefeated in Cage Warriors and made the jump up to the UFC, fighting in London on the same card at UFC 286 as Leon Edwards, who defended his title against Kamaru Usman. And it was just a fantastic night for British MMA. And Christian's fight, it was a funny one. It only lasted about 40 seconds because his opponent got a knee injury. So not quite the debut Christian would have wanted, but a winning debut nonetheless. We recorded this interview a few weeks before Christian's next fight, his second fight in the UFC against Armin Petrosian. Christian lost that fight, that second fight in the UFC, which Dana White had pumped up. Dana in his, and if you don't know, now you know, dubbed it the fight to watch. And it was a great fight, but Christian lost on points and it just wasn't his night. And, you know, I've spoken to him since and he said that, you know, there are a few things that weren't quite right in the prep, but he is fighting again in November, his third fight in the UFC, and it'll be his second in Las Vegas when he fights Cesar Almeida. I think for any professional sports person, a loss is hard to take. And Christian obviously went back to the drawing board, looked at it all. But I think you've got to be realistic with this. You're putting two men that are both trying to take each other's heads off into a cage, and what happens, happens. You know, we've just seen Sean Strickland beat Israel Adesanya in something of a shock victory, and it just shows anything can happen on the night. You know, Sean had lost six professional fights, I think, or has lost six professional fights, and now he's middleweight champion of the world. So the same division that Christian fights in, it's all up for grabs. MMA is an incredible sport. UFC is a phenomenal promotion, and if you're a fan, you're going to love this. If you're not a fan of MMA, there's still a lot to pick out of this. So enjoy it. Take from it that elite fighter mentality, that elite sportsman mentality. There's a lot to take from this and some really poignant moments. So I really hope you enjoy it. Thank you as ever for supporting this podcast by listening, by reviewing 5 stars. Always lovely. Thank you very much for that. Thank you for coming back on some of my social media questions. I've been asking who you want me to be interviewing. So head to social media, go to Starting Line Show on Instagram, on TikTok, on Twitter, go to the Starting Line Podcast on Facebook and find those posts, comment, respond, tell me who you want me to be speaking to, because, you know, we've recorded the first series pretty much now, I think, and we're going to want more. We're going to need more. So I am excited to keep bringing you great guests every Monday, and I want to hear from you. I want to know who you want me to speak to. You can also email hello@startinglinepod.com. Go on startinglinepod.com, the website, have a little gander. And yeah, I'm just really proud of what we've put together so far. So thank you very, very much for supporting. So without further ado, I bring to you Christian Leroy Duncan.
Christian.
Hello, mate.
How are you doing?
No, thank you for doing this. I've been, as I've said to you for as long as we've known each other, I've wanted to do this podcasting thing for 10 years or so now. It's annoying me that I've not done it. I'm getting bored of myself, and I'm sure my friends are getting bored of hearing me talking about it. You've not known me long enough yet to have got bored of me talking about it, I hope, or anything, but we're here.
Thank you
so much. So you are in camp right now?
Yeah, deep in camp at the moment. We have around 3 weeks to the event day, and we leave. This fight's going to be my first fight in the States.
Yeah.
It's in Las Vegas.
Amazing, man.
So we're flying out in 2 weeks' time, a week before, just to adjust to the altitude and the time zone difference. But yeah, this point in camp is grueling, you know, it's the tough part of camp. I say minimum 3 times a day. That's
minimum.
That's including
most people don't train 3 times
strength
a week.
Training. But that's kind of the routine that we found works for us, you know, nice. Getting everything in.
What sort of stuff are you doing?
At the moment, it's a mix of things, obviously, mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. It's kind of structured. Mornings, more technical. Mm-hmm. Afternoons is my strength conditioning. And then the evenings will be the sparring, like pad work, that kind of stuff.
Anything in particular that you're working on for your opponent? Yeah.
Yeah. So this opponent is a striker. So
right.
He's
stand up, right?
Yeah, stand up. That's right. He's a well-established kickboxer. Got some good accolades in kickboxing before he got to the UFC and mixed martial arts. And I say that's his strong point. Watching his fights doesn't really tend to go into the grappling area too much.
Really?
Whereas all my past opponents, well, you could see 90% of them were strong grapplers. So this is going to be good to actually get a good fight on the feet. Have fun.
Nice. And do you feel like you're more of a stand-up fighter? Do you feel like that's where you come to?
I would say starting my career as an amateur, definitely.
Yeah. I think most people probably, if you don't come into mixed martial arts from that kind of grappling wrestling background, you tend to start with kickboxing, right?
Yeah. It's just easiest thing to do, you know, just put your hands up, throw two punches, throw two kicks. When it gets to the grappling and wrestling, there's a lot more detail and structure to it. I began straight away to fall in love with the grappling and wrestling.
Yeah.
I don't know why, just because of my creativity I brought from basketball. I could kind of just have fun with things on the floor. So I'm just doing like all these different kind of rolls and flips, which isn't really common. So I just had fun with it.
So we've not really seen that yet, have we?
No, not yet. Again, like I said, I haven't actually been forced into these positions to have to do it. It just hasn't come about yet, but I'm sure it will.
This guy, I think he's gone the distance the last few fights, hasn't he?
Yeah.
You don't tend to go the distance. You tend to finish.
Yeah.
Is that what you're hoping for?
If it happens, it happens. You know, I say this every time. I don't force anything. But if it comes, it just happens to come. I guess it's just my style of fighting. And if I see an opening, then I'm going to take it.
You're ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. You're of course, ready. Always ready.
Do you know what's funny is, you know, I said that I've been doing a tiny bit. You know,
I'm
you know, mid-30s cliche now, thinking, right, I'm not playing rugby, so what else am I doing? So I started MMA with Lyle.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Doing defense yesterday. And it's so much to think about. I can't imagine then a man in front of me wanted to take my head off thinking about all these things.
What was you doing?
So
what
we were doing just leg checks, you know, body check, like body cover, kind of, you know, answering the phone.
Okay.
You know, that's what you called it.
So, has he brought those like the long noodle?
Yeah, he's hitting me with noodles just constantly. So at the end, he was like, right, I'm coming at you with combos. And he's just like, head, body, leg. And I didn't see any of it coming. I'm just getting smacked left and right. and you, it's almost like you forget everything. I've never done any of this. I guess that's a funny thing. It's so, like, it's brand new. I just feel like an absolute idiot. And that's why I love it. You know what I mean? I'm super curious about, like, getting better at it.
Yeah,
I've got no intention of doing what you're doing. None.
Just having fun with it.
And I think, you know, because the gym's all well and good, isn't it? And all that. But it's, you know, it's fun. So what got you into MMA in the first place?
I was playing basketball when I left school. I went to Bristol because that was that locally, that's the best academy for basketball. It's one of the top ones in the country.
Where was it?
Filton College in Bristol. Yeah, Filton College. I was kind of playing a bit here, but wasn't really serious. I was doing like one day on a weekend.
Is that the Blazers?
Yeah,
is
Blazers. Just the Blazers. Yeah. But Blazers, that was like on a Saturday. And my school didn't have a basketball team. So I just played at break time. And then I used to travel to Gloucester College because I knew a few guys there. I was in school still, but because I was familiar with them, they brought me along in the summertime to the camp that they had at the college. So I would play a lot with them. And then my game within a year went through the roof.
Just because you're playing with better people.
Exactly. A lot older, a lot more physical.
Yeah.
I just caught up to their level. And then I was going to go to Gloucester College, but then the coach taught me into looking at Bristol, just because, again, it's one of the top academies. Yeah. And he said, if you want to take it to where you're telling me.
So you were doing like A-levels or something, like the equivalent at college while also playing, or was it all basketball?
No, it was all basketball. So the course I enrolled on was called the ACE course,
right,
which is Advanced Apprenticeship in Sporting Excellence, and it's specific for basketball. So the governing body, Basketball England, had this qualification which goes with it. And essentially, you gain a qualification in basketball where you can go to coaching and sport and etc. But then I had my college course to go along with it, which was, I think, BTEC sport as well. Whatever I was doing, I didn't care what course I was doing. I just wanted to go to play.
As long as you
play basketball, yeah. So I went to the trials, got selected for the team, and I spent 2 years there in Filton. We won the national championships and the under 18 national cup as well in my 2 years there.
What are the teams in the country here?
You've got London, got a good few teams in London. Manchester were one of the favourites, which is one of the teams that were in the final four. But we played London in the finals under 18.
And he still won.
And yeah. But there's an athletic team. Man.
I bet they hated that. Some kids from the Southwest.
This is it.
Where was that played?
That was in Manchester. In Manchester, the finals. So you had the final fours, which is 2 days. And then you got the final four teams. And then the second day, you'll go into the final two.
What position did you play?
I played a two or a three.
Right.
Which is at shooting guard.
Right, okay.
For my size, that's quite... Usually, you'd be a lot taller player.
Yeah, you're 6'2", right?
Yeah. So typically, that's a point guard.
Yes.
You know, that kind of size there. But because our team was quite small, I had to fill other roles.
Yeah.
And because of my physicality at that point, then, yeah, it made sense at the time. So in my third year, I was debating what to do, whether to stay another year or come back to Gloucester. And the Gloucester coach, I was speaking to him, and we kind of had a plan set if I come back, what we'll do. So I come back for my third year. And then here in Gloucester, we won the championship for the league here. It's not as high as the league, but for me, it was more about the time I was playing and the experience I gained, because I was, like I said, over there, I'm one of the bigger players, so I have to fill other roles, which realistically in the top end of the sport.
You're just not going to.
Then at the end of the year, things didn't really go to plan. I wanted to go out to the States at this point. Just things fell through. Best way to put it. Just things fell through.
Were you looking at anywhere, like universities in the States?
I was just going to get a mixtape of all my games, like my highlights, and then send them out to different places. And then hopefully hear back from a few potentials and then pick from there. But yeah, it didn't really work out that way.
I mean, it seems to have worked out right for you now.
And then, yeah, this is it. Fortunately, I was like in a state, of limbo. I didn't really know what to do with myself, because for the past how many years, my head's been on basketball.
Just all basketball, yeah.
That's what, which in my lifestyle, I was training like 2-3 times a day, and that. I went to watch a friend compete who done mixed martial arts locally. And then after that, I thought, I want to try this. I want to see how I get on with this. I just thought, it just looks fun in there.
Who was it? Who was fighting?
My friend, Jammy, he trains at the gym. Yeah. And Harlem was on that card as well. And Jamar, Jammy's brother, which I'm very close to. I grew up with those guys. Yeah, watching it, I was thinking, I want to try this. Yeah. I could have done it. I was just getting excited watching it. Imagine myself.
How old were you at this point?
I was, I think, 18, just turning 19 at this point.
No mixed martial arts experience? No boxing experience?
I'd done a bit of kickboxing when I was younger.
Right.
Maybe like 2 years on and off, once or twice a week. But other than that, no, nothing.
Do you think it was you trying to fill the hole that kind of basketball had left?
Exactly.
And you're like, right, I'm going to give this a go.
And then 100% into it. Because locally, basketball, there's nowhere to go. I'd have to.
Tough, isn't it?
To go somewhere else. And because I was too old at this point, I was just turned 18, which is, I think it's up to 18. You can play at the college. So that was my third year finished. I couldn't really play from there. So I was, like I said, in that state of limbo. And I found this and I went to try it out on the Monday. Mark Weir's gym.
Yeah. Mark Weir is he's a legend around here, right? I think we're very lucky to have Mark around here.
100%, man. 100%. I did obviously know Mark. I was familiar with Mark, and I knew that he owned that gym. But I thought, yeah, I was going to go down and try. And then from that day to this day, I haven't had longer than a week off training. Yeah.
It gets you.
It sucks you in.
Again, I'm already feeling it. I was already saying to Lyle, I got my gloves this week, and I was like, I love these things already. It's just like MMA sparring gloves and whatever. And I was like, I hate the fact that it's now going to be a week until, just because of work. Just because I'm going to forget everything. I'm already rubbish. So, it's already rubbish.
You'll pick it up quick, man. You'll grab the experience.
It's fun. So it just grabbed you straight away.
Yeah, it did. It sucked me in and I just got addicted to it.
You've developed into an athlete by that point because of all the basketball you've played, right?
Yeah.
So you might have some degree of natural ability, but I guess you've really honed it. You've worked hard on it. So
yeah, definitely.
You felt, did it transfer easily and well to MMA?
I would say definitely because of the style of basketball that I played was very, I like to do all the kind of flashy moves.
Yeah.
Jumping around and, you know, up and under the basket, this kind of stuff. So kind of translated that into mixed martial arts with the footwork, especially and the jumping ability. And then it just become from every day learning and learning and learning. I'd be pestering Mark to be on every session. When's the next session?
Really?
I'd be staying after class and, you know, Mark does his one-to-one.
Yes.
I'd be watching. And I think for like 2 weeks, I was just staying after class and watching and trying to like copy it, watching on the sideline. And then Mark at one point said, do you want to join in? Jump in. So he let me jump in on a few sessions early on and that just boosted my progression.
So you were still like 18, 19 at this time?
Yeah, 19 at this point. And then he sort of like, must have seen how invested I was.
Mm.
Sort of like took me.
You just kept turning up?
Yeah. And I would stay and just keep.
Have you watched McGregor's documentary?
No, I haven't seen it.
His coach says he just kept showing up. He just wouldn't stop showing up and it was everything to him. So for you, that was everything at that point in time.
Absolutely everything, yeah. Completely everything. For money at the time, I think I was, you know, at Wars Ice Cream Fight?
Yeah.
I was there for, I think, around 4 or 5 months just to
get some money.
But then it's shift work. Mm. So the times will kind of interfere with training. So if I was on a night shift, as soon as I'm finished, I'm going straight to training and sleep, then back to working. And then vice versa, if it was day shift, I'm fitting in between the training, in between. I was only there for like 4 months. And then that's when Calvin, my brother, he kind of spoke to me because he said that I wasn't playing basketball anymore. And he said I just got into MMA. He wouldn't know where I would get to at this point. So he's kind of like, get a trade under you about an apprenticeship as an electrician, which is what I ended up doing with Clarkson Evans.
Right, okay.
For 2 years. But I went into it knowing what I wanted, really.
So you're like, I'm going to get this under my belt, but I know.
Yeah.
Did you already know then by that point that you're like, I want to go pro?
Oh, yeah.
So how long after you started training did you then go into amateur competition?
6 months.
What weight were you fighting at then?
Middleweight.
You're still middleweight then. Okay, so you've always been roughly the same build.
I was a lot smaller, just I hadn't filled out naturally then. Yeah. I wasn't doing gym.
As much, yeah. Were you doing any?
No, nothing at all.
Nothing at all, just technical, just...
Yeah.
And I guess, as you say, that athleticism from basketball, which no doubt, you know, you're drilled, so.
Yeah.
Did you miss basketball?
I do miss it, especially when I play it. I always say, I want to play another game. I want to get into it again, but realistically, there's no time around it. So I just fit it in here and there.
Tell me about your first amateur fight. So you, 6 months in, I mean, that's not very much time.
No.
You know, to go straight into competition, so.
Not at all.
Can you remember your first fight?
Yeah, clearly. I remember it was, 6 months in. But I was, like I said, I was training with Mark all the time. I seen a poster go up on the wall. So I was part of the second or third year recruits, which Mark does every year, where he selects like a group of fighters to be on this recruits program, which is essentially guys that want to fight and take it serious.
Mm.
So I went onto this program. He usually says, you have to have your first fight after a year of training. And I seen this poster go up in the war. So I seen all the other guys getting selected to fight, get ready for this event. And I was thinking, oh, I really want to fight. I really want to get onto this. So I kept saying to Mark, I said to Mark, can I fight on this event? And he's like, no.
Because like, he's just like, you're not ready yet.
Yeah, he's like, it's too early.
I mean, he's probably quite a good judge of it.
Yeah.
Obviously, all that experience.
This is probably like two months out from the event.
Right, okay.
So then I just kept getting onto him.
Like, so
kept pestering him to get onto it. Obviously, then I stopped. So I was thought like, yeah, all right, I'll do the 4 year. It makes sense. But I was just eager to...
You just wanted to get in there.
Just to compete, yeah.
What was the competition?
Pain Pit, it was called. And it was...
I love their names.
Pain Pit.
It's like, I mean, I know, you know what you're getting.
Yeah. This is... And the poster was like this all like blood splashed.
Was it really?
Yeah. One of the biggest shows in the Southwest. It was run by Richard Shaw. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
No, I'm not, no.
His son, Jack Shaw, now is in the UFC.
Right.
And he brought his son up through the same program. And that turned into Cage Warriors. Cage Warriors took over.
Got it.
And
then, okay.
Yeah, Pain Fit is in Wales, Newport, Wales. I remember I was on site working.
Yes, of course, yeah.
I was on my apprenticeship. And I got a phone call from Mark. And it's not often that Mark would ring me out of training. But when he rang me, I'm thinking, my heart starts beating. I'm thinking, This must be what I think.
It's gotta be it, yeah.
And he rang me in and he's like, I say, wait, what are you up to? You're just chatting. And he's like, so you wanna fight on the shows? I'm like, yes. I was like, yeah. And he said, all right then, put you in a middleweight. I'm gonna find you an opponent. From there on, I just remember my heart was beating on sight the whole day. I'm thinking about the fight. And I got to training and just had an extra motivation now for training. And then, yeah, we got ready for that. 2 months later, I had my debut. I remember the guy whose name was Adam Mayo. And I actually lost my debut. Yeah, yeah. I remember how it went to decision.
Okay.
He just kept, because at this point, I'm only 6 months in, so I'm quite fresh to the grappling. And so he was just grabbing me and holding me. And I didn't really have the answer to escape. So he wasn't damaging. He wasn't.
It was
really
just the control. Anything.
Exactly, just control. But then there was like glimpses of, I was doing all my crazy stuff, which at that point is uncontrolled. I just did it.
We'll get on to all of this.
I'm throwing it out there. So it was an exciting performance, even though I lost. And I enjoyed every second of it. And then after, I remember there was a write-up and it was saying Christian Duncan allegedly had his debut after 6 months of training. Like, allegedly.
What, so they were trying to say?
Yeah, like, he must have been training for years. There's no way he's been training.
That must have felt good.
But yeah, it's a positive. It's a positive. Yeah. But then from there on, yeah, just kept building up and building up.
Nice. How many fights did you have amateur?
I think it went into the 20s.
What was your record in amateurs?
Oh, that's a good question. I lost, I want to say, 6 by decision. It was like 17 wins, 6 losses, I'm sure.
Never been knocked out?
No. All decisions.
All decisions.
Yeah. Again, it was all the same kind of thing, the control, which is where I learned a lot from.
Yeah.
And I started to fall in love with that game.
How quickly then did Cage Warriors come along after that?
Like I said, Cage Warriors took over the amateur show, yeah. So I was with them as an amateur.
Right.
There was the amateur Grand Prix. 4 nations in the UK had their own Cage Warriors. And then the champions of each Cage Warriors would fight each other. And then so the winner would be crowned the European Grand Prix champion. And I won that as an amateur. From there, I went on to the IMAS, which is separate. And that's essentially, the best way I can describe it is the unofficial Olympics for MMA, amateur MMA. And my first event, which was the World Championships, I got to the semi-finals. So I finished with a bronze medal. In the Europeans, I got to the final. I got silver. And I fought a Russian guy from Dagestan. You know how Khabib fights?
Yes.
That same style.
Oh, is it really?
Exactly.
Middleweight?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like a bigger guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
But these events shape my future just from the experience, you know. Getting to fight those kind of guys early on, which I'm going to be fighting now. So I got that experience, which again, elevated my level.
From the amateurs, you thought, yeah, I need to then get into, basically improve my grappling. And,
yeah.
Well, not even improve, it sounds like it was already good, but you know, just kind of really focus on that stuff.
Yeah, definitely improve. Defensively as well as offensively.
Yeah.
When I won the Grand Prix, that kind of guaranteed you a professional contract with Cage Warriors. And then I wanted to wait out a bit longer. So I did a couple more at the IMAF, just again to gain more experience. And then we decided it was the time to go over to the pros. We spoke to the Cage Warriors, spoke to Shaky, Richard Shaw, which was our connect, obviously, because he'd done the regional Cage Warriors. He was our connect through to them. And we worked out a contract. Yeah, I started my pro career with Cage Warriors. Yeah.
It was a quick ascension in Cage Warriors, wasn't it?
Really it came as come and gone just like that.
I mean, what was it? 6 fights in Cage Warriors? Seven
fights.
Yeah.
Just under 2 years.
And how many times did you go the distance? Will Curry, right?
Yeah. Will Curry 2. No, that was it. Yeah. I thought that was it.
Yeah, I think it might. I think it was when I was looking. I think it was. But everything else you're finishing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. So your weird, wonderful aerial fun that you have with basketball, it turns into flying knees and spinning back elbows and flare finishes. Basically, that's what I don't want to set you up too much because then every fight, you shouldn't always expect it. But do you expect that of yourself? Most fights, just to have fun in there and try different things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. As you pull it, have fun in there. I say, I don't really hesitate to try these things because I just like, if I see something, I'll try it. Even if it's something I haven't done in training, I might see it in the fight.
And Mark's probably there holding his head saying, what are you doing? What's going on? and then it, although he probably can't speak because, you know, we should say, you know, fastest UFC debut knockout, you know, came straight out with a high head kick.
That fell into the punch and that was what she wrote.
His coach would have probably been saying, look, you know, just ease yourself in, you know, this is the big, you know, this is the big leagues. Nope.
Game over.
I love what you just said. You're just having fun in there. I think a lot of athletes take themselves very, very seriously, as you know, you'd imagine some should, some do. I've said this about you to people I've spoken to about you. You know, you're really reassured. You're humble. You're not kind of this over-exaggerated, shouty character. You know, like you get in some mixed martial artists who understandably are kind of trying to play the game. You know, they're trying to play the game for promotion. I get that. But you're really assured. And then you get in to that octagon and all that cage and just have fun. It's lovely. I was speaking to another guy, Dan Norton, plays rugby or played England rugby sevens, Team GB, scored the most tries of any, you know, highest try scorer ever. There's a smile on his face always. You know, he genuinely looked like he was having fun. And, you know, that wasn't always the case, it turns out. How are you feeling in the build up to a fight?
it's very mixed. It's very mixed.
Does it depend on the fight, on the matchup?
I think to me with fights, it's the same kind of mix, like emotions. The more you get a lot of adrenaline dumping. But like you said, you think you get all the different kind of voices in your head, and you get picturing of how the fight could go as well. And obviously you do get ways that could potentially go against you. But then it's like you're finding solutions for that picture. Like you're like, okay, if it does come to that, then I want to do this to make sure that doesn't happen. But it's like a big battle. Not a battle, but it's a big like back and forth in your head. But it's always positive.
What's been the most challenging fight you've had?
I'd say the Will Curry fight in Cage Warriors.
Yeah.
Second fight with him that went a distance.
What did you learn from it?
Definitely my grappling had to go up, which it did.
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, I hope somebody takes you down or somebody takes you down. I want to see it.
And I definitely kind of stole some of his moves in that fight. Put them in my pocket, yeah. Put them onto people who are in training. But since then, I've traveled a bit, been to Thailand. There were some high-level grapplers out there, and I took a lot from them as well.
So, I mean, that you've been to Thailand twice now, is it?
Twice, yeah.
Twice, so you went both this camp and previous.
Yeah.
So your previous camp, first UFC camp, first UFC kind of experience, how did it go?
I haven't experienced anything like it, and I've been through the IMAF and Cage Warriors, which are very, very professionally run. Even in the background, the way everything's set is kind of tailors you to each next level. Like IMAF telling me to Cage Warriors and then Cage Warriors to UFC. But the runners behind the scenes are seamless. When we arrived at the hotel, we checked in and we got told where the office is, UFC office. And what they'd done, the whole first floor of the hotel, they've stripped the rooms out and turned them all into offices.
That's big money, isn't it?
Crazy. I've never seen
it. It was at the
O2,
wasn't it?
Yeah. And each room, you'd have like the office, the kit room, interview rooms, media. And then you kind of get introduced to what you'll be doing for the week, like Monday through to Friday. Like you've got an interview this time. Had our kit given to us, so you can try in your kit. The shorts fitting me on my legs, but not my waist, which I have this problem a lot. And I asked for a smaller size. She said, no. She just grabbed them and said, I just pinned it and said, no, cool, I'll tailor it for you. I'm just going to, when you come to fight, it'd be perfect fit. And I was just scratching my head.
Amazing, isn't it?
This is how we're getting treated now.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you get taken downstairs and you go to the UFC PI, which is the Performance Institute. So they do all your meals for the week. You're given a bag each day. And they kind of tell you the rundown of like, eat this at this time.
What sort of food is it?
Pre-weight cut. So from the Tuesday to the Friday, more like lean foods and not too much carbs. Yeah. And even the chicken is no salt on it, no seasoning. Yeah. Just to kind of, so your body doesn't hold on to any fluid. And then after, you're getting some good food, man. A lot of carbs. Yeah. We got like steak, potatoes, all this kind of stuff.
What did you go in at weight-wise?
I weighed in, I think, around 90 on a Tuesday. I made weight at 83.9, which is 185 pounds.
How'd you find that, the 6K cut?
Yes, now I'm used to it. It gets easier each time.
It looks so intense. I can't tell you. Like the number of times I've seen fights, and a clip footage of them cutting weight, but... Yeah. It looks intense.
For me, this is a small cut, really. There's people that cut like 10 plus kilos.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, how do you feel about that, though? Because you might end up in middleweight fighting somebody that walks around at 95.
Yeah, potentially.
And then they're dropping 10K. They're dropping like 8% or whatever that was. Well, my maths isn't great, but you know, of their body fat body to then quickly get back up. Like, do you feel like that? You don't mind that?
No, it's never been something that's coming to my mind. My weight stays low just because I'm always training, like I said, longer than a week off. So my weight doesn't fluctuate. It stays kind of steady. And then when it comes to camp, it drops down naturally. But we have heavy guys in the gym, guys well over 95 kilo, which I'm training with daily. And I don't have any issues.
No, I saw somebody yesterday and he looked at me and he went, "You going to come to classes?" I said, I don't know yet. Why? And he said, "How much do you weigh?"
Yeah, that's straight away.
I said, I was like, wait, how much do you weigh? 120K.
And
he was like, yeah, you know, basically I want another big boy. And I'm like, what, just to throw me around? From a professional perspective, did you always then think, right, okay, this is just going to be my life now? Like, you know, the second that you'd won that Grand Prix, you just thought, right, I just want this to be my life.
From the day I walked into Mark's gym.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're 18 years old.
I just turned 19.
This is it. This is what I want to do. Just single-minded.
Yeah, single-minded. Tunnel vision.
What drew you to sport in general?
Just active from young. I remember when I was a kid, my mum would always take me to like after school clubs and the different kind of clubs, mainly just to keep me active and also keep me out of trouble as well. And just because that's all I've known is being active, and I would go out a lot.
You grew up in Posmead, right?
Posmead, yeah. I'd be out every day just running around. as you do as a kid. Yeah. But my dad always tells me stories of just running around everywhere. I'll go into people's houses, be running around everywhere, going like into their fridge, food in their fridge. But I'm just active kid, man. Just hyper. Active. Yeah, very hyper.
Yeah. Good kid, though?
Yeah. Mischievous more than anything.
I always think that's like an endearing quality in a kid. It's just like a little glint in your eye. You're like, okay.
That's it. Very mischievous. Even in school, I wasn't really getting in trouble like that. It's more for just, you know, being mischievous. I was kind of like the kid that the teachers would hate to like.
Yeah, you know? I know. That's what I mean. It's that mischief. It's like, I bet you got away with quite a lot because the teachers are like, all right, like, I get it.
But yeah, man, I say just very active.
Tell me about the wristband you've got on. It says Forever Youngs. What does that represent?
My first year of primary school, first ever time I went to school, I met my closest friend the day on the primary school. It wasn't an actual day, like the induction before you start school. And we just clicked and we got on very well from primary school all the way through to before we left for secondary school. We was like very, very close, go to his house all the time after school. His family kind of become my second family, that very close with his mum. And his two brothers that I mentioned is Jammy, who I went to watch fight, and Jamar, again, he's crazy talented. But yeah, we grew up together and he was kind of my partner in the mischief, you know.
Yeah.
We get in trouble all the time. They keep us apart all the time. After like our first or 2 years together, he was always like, yeah, keep Christian and Joel apart. Because they know what we're like when we're cool. together.
So you'd be sat on separate sides of the room.
Yeah, and literally.
Just like looking at each other like, we're going to cause some trouble.
What are we going to do today?
Yeah.
But again, the teachers loved us as well. Yeah. And then when we left primary, kind of parted ways from, we didn't go to the same schools, but we'd always like link up after.
Did he live near you?
Yeah, only like 10 minute ride from my. So we'd always link up after school. And then also I went to Bristol, so I didn't see anybody for a while. But we'd always keep in contact. Came back in my final year. And then again, we just got closer again. And I started training mixed martial arts.
Did he get into it as well?
No, he didn't get into it. He's into his music. When I say I've never met anybody so talented with music, it's crazy how good he was. Freestyling as well. So you do a thing where you say, give me a word. And then from that word alone, you just freestyle off the rip.
I love that.
And then he made a song that was quite popular in the city, Fly Team, which is people might recognize from my walk out to the song.
You always walk out to Fly Team.
Always have that in there when I walk out. But he had an accident, a bike accident.
And he was how old at this point?
He was, I think, 20 at this point. Right. 20, just before his 21st birthday, days before his 21st. He had an accident. He passed away. Since then, I had this band made. So obviously I've got him with me all the times. And also I passed it to his family as well. So I gave them out to everybody that obviously I knew him and I said pass it on.
Yeah. And his music name was Youngs, right?
Yeah, Young Montana.
Young Montana.
So Jammy Montana. They're brothers, so it's Jammy Young and then Jamar's Tiny.
What I love is when you go to the YouTube video for it, all the comments now are starting to say, Christian brought me here.
No way.
There are some comments on there.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Yeah, have a look.
The
legacy. Saying, you know, exactly that. I think,
legacy.
You know, the fact that you carry him around with you all the time, carry Joel on your, you know, on your arm, and you walk out to his song, you know, he's bringing people to it. And that's in 10 years time, you know, how many views is that song going to have? You know, that's the exciting thing. And, you know, how many people are you bringing to it? That's.
He isn't going to hear it that potentially may have not have heard it.
So. Yeah. Will you always walk out to it?
Yeah. There was a time where I think I had another song mixed in with it, but it'll always be there.
How did you find out about his accident?
I was actually after training one morning. There was a news article my friend that I was training with said something about there was an accident, somebody got in an accident. Like, it didn't say who. And I got home and then somebody mentioned to me that Joel was in an accident. Or one of the brothers, they said, was in an accident. And I was like, what do you mean? What? West car? I was like, nah. Then I ran Jammy and then I was like, what happened? Like, who was it? What happened? And he's like, he said, Joel. And I was like, what happened? And obviously he said, what happened? To this day, I never had any feeling. Everything just kind of just froze on me. It was the weirdest feeling. It didn't feel real. Obviously, because how we grew up together, everything we've done together.
I mean, you've been like 15 years.
I've been closer to anybody and their family in my life. So it was weird. Obviously, it went down straight away to the hospital. And everybody was there, his whole family, all our friends were there. And then we went in to see him. And obviously seeing his mum and his sisters hit me again.
Break your heart, yeah.
From there, I just wanted to make sure that everything that I'd done included him in it, you know. So it was something that's never, like I said, forever young. That's why it's forever young, you know, because it's forever going to live on. The name will forever live on. People will know about him.
Do you have to take it off for fights? No.
It stays on.
You just put a bit of tape on just before you go.
Yeah, so that it's not, no, but yeah, it stays. And also I always have my inner dialogue with him where I go out. Remember we had a conversation because we were so busy doing what we was doing, talking about how we see each other at the top of what we're doing, you know.
I love that.
So you, it's still you progress, with... but still going to see him at the top. Yeah, just always have this.
When you say you have that inner dialogue with him, what sort of things?
Basically, just conversation. I'll be speaking for a bit, just going off on and off, saying, "Like we're almost there." You know, I'm gonna get to play your song at the O2 Arena in front of all these people. You know, so it's like he's performing without performing. You know, people don't realize it, but he's performing in front of them. Even though you don't know as much as I am, he's performing.
You're taking him to Vegas with you?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's incredibly special. Are you still close to the family?
Yeah, yeah, especially the brothers. I see them quite a lot.
I guess because they're at the gym.
Yeah, they're at the gym. They're at the gym. With time, I would say I do need to make more time, but with what I'm doing, still, yeah, every time I see them, it's, like I said, it's my second family, so it just feels like there's a lot of love for them, man.
Are you close to your family?
Yeah, very. Yeah, I don't have a huge family. It's more close family. But,
I guess that's how I was introduced to you is I've known your brother Calvin. Uh-huh. Your older brother, Calvin, he was the year above me at school. He just, you know, picked up the phone and he was like, obviously doing what I do PR-wise is, you know, I think my brother's about to really make it big in USC in fighting. I was like, okay. He said, can you just like, you know, any advice? And I was like, I'll have a conversation, you know, yeah. See. He was like, no, you look after him.
Yeah.
You know, you can see his face. You look after him. Like that. I was like, okay, I don't know what to do, but yeah, sure, we'll chat. But as I say, I've known Calvin, a long time, since I was 11. So like, genuinely, yeah. So I'm 35 now. So yeah, 20 something years. And we always got on at school just because I think he was always daft as you, like Calvin ramp around.
Yeah, standard.
And I think we got a good understanding of each other, kind of, you know, where we both come from.
Yeah.
All that sort of thing. Yeah. And obviously the first time I met you, you know, I thought, you're related, both you two. He's a very different character. He's a very, such a, such a presence, an energy. You know what I mean? It's like you are in the cage, like that's him 100 miles an hour all the time. I think I've seen him like sat down quite once. Do you know what I mean? Like when he's eating or something.
It's rare.
But no, he's great. So, and your mum, how does she fit? Does she come to watch you?
Yeah, she does.
How does she feel about the whole thing?
Kind of like watches through her fingers, but yeah, she loves it. She loves it at the same time.
So, I mean, one of the first times I met you, I said, so where do you want this to go? And you said, you know what I love? And is it like a shared dream, you and Calvin? Do you want to tell us about? And
Calvin's always been heavily motivated. He's very much his own person, and like he wants to do his own thing. He doesn't like being told or have something over there.
Yeah.
Learn over the top of him. And he's very business-minded. And we always spoke growing up about, oh, we love to do this for mum. We love to do this, buy mum this, do that, buy a house, buy a whole estate for everybody. Just, you know, and your kids, you just visualize things like, because yeah, there's a people a lot worse off. At the same time, we didn't necessarily have the most of the stuff, you know, growing up, which is just normal to us. We didn't think, but always just thinking, yeah, imagine if we could do this.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This and this, and then things have just fell in place where we potentially have the avenues to make something happen. which is, I think that's a, even more of a flame in the fire, because it's not just doing it for yourself, it's more for bringing up family and seeing what potentially do for the future generations as well. But yeah, it's more so for the family I have in mind, you know.
No, that's incredible. I mean, I remember you saying it's like getting like a cul-de-sac and every, you know, every house in there is another family member. Which, you know, like, why not?
Why not? Exactly.
You know, why not? I heard somebody talking the other day and they said, you know, everything I'm doing, like, I want my kids' kids not to worry about anything. You know, that's it's quite a nice way of thinking. But some of the most incredible entrepreneurs and people I've met, the first thing they did, especially if they came from, you know, not a lot, was buy his mum a house. And, you know, there's something just, I guess she's always been there. She's always, you know, super supportive. When you said, mum, I want to be a fighter, what did she say? Was she like, was she just like, whatever you want to do?
I think it was just because I had done so much stuff. I think it was just like, just do what you're doing. Let's go. And then when it actually, when things actually started coming to the level it was going at, like I'm representing Great Britain, winning the Cage Warriors Championship, amateur, and then going professional, traveling across the world, then it kind of hit her like, okay, this is something serious, you know, then she would get behind it even more so. But yeah, she's been supportive from I was young, like I said, taking me as a kid to all these different clubs and stuff, you know.
What about your dad?
Yeah,
is he supportive?
Yeah, very. I'll say he definitely guided a lot of my character and my values from young. I didn't grow up that my dad wasn't, my mum weren't together from as long as I can remember. But he's very well respected in the community. Yeah, very well. His character is very similar to mine, which I think I inherited a lot from him, obviously. But yeah, he taught me a lot.
Is he sporty? Is he?
Yeah.
Is your mum sporty? Like, is there any of that going?
More so my dad, he's a weightlifter, right. Bodybuilder locally, very well known for his size and strength.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Yeah. Chris Duncan.
Chris Duncan,
yeah.
What gym did he go to?
Gymnasium.
I used to go to Gymnasium. Yeah. I bet I know who he is.
If you see his face, you'll definitely
really?
Recognize
him. I started going when I was maybe 14. The second I could get into a gym, I was like, yeah, everybody's big. Everybody's so big.
Everybody there. If you went there, you went to train.
Yeah, they really did. And it was the best because I was just like, all I wanted was some size for rugby. That was all I was thinking. So I went in there and I remember my first few sessions. It was like a pound a time. And sometimes they wouldn't even make me pay. Do you know what I mean? If I did, or like they give me protein for free or something.
Yeah, good people.
Great.
Yeah.
Great people. I just sat down on the shoulder press, like, you know, just the machine, just because that's like, you know how that works. Right? It goes up and it goes down. There's nothing hard to it. And then the guys there, these absolute tanks, just came to me and they're like, okay, you keep turning up. Similar.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
like, right, okay, we'll show you some stuff. And, you know, your dad might have even been one of them.
I would be surprised.
What I loved about Gymnasium was that community. You know that people there don't have a lot, but they'll give you a lot.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They'll give you what they do have. And as I say that, you know, Carol, the person, you know, another person that used to work there, she was so, this motherly figure in the gym that would boss these 20 stone men around.
I remember
Carol?
On the desk, right?
Yeah, on the desk. Yeah, you remember Carol. Yeah. She'd be like, she'd shout things like, if you're big enough to get them off the racks, you're big enough to put them back.
Yeah.
all this. And I loved it because, yeah, she was like half the, a third of these guys' size. But you wouldn't mess with her.
you wouldn't.
No, so yeah, I probably would recognize it. That.
Definitely.
You never fancied going down that road, going down the bodybuilding road?
It just didn't happen. I remember I was 8, 9. I went to a club around the corner and I go in there to see my dad training. I remember I used to see my dad as a superman because of how big he was and how strong he was, you know. But I went to a couple of sessions when I was young, like 10 or 12, and my dad beasted me even though I was like 10 or 12. I'm coming out there aching, trying to put my seatbelt on and I'm trying to put it down. And I'm like only like 10 to 12 years old. But no, I didn't really, because I was doing basketball and so on.
Quite get the bug for the bodybuilding.
Not for the bodybuilding, no, because again, it's like, obviously it's strict movements, isn't it? But with this, there's so much freedom and all this kind of stuff you can do.
It is funny. Do you know, that's actually one of the reasons why I'm giving it a go. It's just like the gym's wonderful, but it can kind of get a bit boring, can't it? And it's a bit samey and all of that stuff. So no source of just motivation to try something else. And how do you feel with cardio? Do you enjoy?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I make it fun though. So I do stuff like, I don't know if you've seen the wheelbarrow that I do, where I put weight in the wheelbarrow and run up a hill. So it's like a challenge, but it's fun. So you're like trying to beat your times and stuff. But you just make it fun. Like you said, otherwise it can get boring. Like just going for a run gets boring. So I'll find other ways to make it.
If you can exercise and it doesn't feel like exercise, it's the best.
You're winning.
You're absolutely winning, yeah. So where do you want to go? Where do you want to go from here? Like middleweight's a stacked division. It's like welterweight, middleweight, you know, most divisions, but you know, middleweight in particular. Do you have a ranking goal or are you just thinking about working your way up?
I would say I can't. I asked this question a few times, but I can't seem to put a, like, cap or a lid onto.
I guess you don't know who moves in and out of the division as well. You can't control that.
That's true. That's true. I can see beyond the championship level. I wouldn't put a cap onto it. I would say no cap, no limits or what potentially could come of it.
So you're 27 now, right?
Or you're 27. Yeah.
You know, the scary thing is 8-0, and you know the finishes you do pull off. You could arguably say you're not even anywhere near your peak yet. And that's a scary thought. I want the division to be scared by that thought. To think you're 27 coming at the guy you're fighting, you know, he's that bit older. You know, what is he, 32, 33, something
32,
like that?
32, I think. 32. A bit more experienced.
So, you know, a few years on you. What are you expecting?
Same as all my fights. I probably the least experienced. All the fights I've had, I've been the least experienced.
And it's not made much of a difference, has it?
Nah, especially in terms of like length in the sport. Length as a pro, probably one of the least experienced, but it doesn't mean anything, you know.
No, that's the thing. I mean, you've had guys come into the UFC with only a handful of fights under their belt.
Yeah.
You know, still really deliver.
Yeah. But even so, they've had past combat experience, whereas I had basketball, you know.
Yeah. It's a phenomenally interesting way into it.
Yeah. So it shows that what Mark has to give, you know, just his knowledge and experience gives you that fast track. Because it's not traditional the way he teaches. His style isn't like, do this or do that. It's very much, this is the technique, and then you can tailor it to how it works for you. Because we're playing things all the time.
It's not prescriptive. He's not like, you have to do this.
No, not at all. Not at all. So you'll learn the technique, the fundamentals, and then you'll kind of play around for your own style. So like, you've got different arm lengths, you've got different strengths, you know, we've got different body sizes, so not everything will work the same. Like, one technique will work, but then to make it perfect for you, you have to adjust it slightly. So we play around with a lot of different ideas, and that gives me the freedom in there to think on the fly.
Such a nice way of making, just individualizing
each person.
You know, each person, you're going to fight such a different range of styles that, you know, to have your own. Do you feel like you've got your own fighting style?
Yeah. So I call it like omni. Like
omni.
Yeah,
okay, I like that.
Like this. A mixture, like all styles. Depending on who I'm fighting, who I'm sparring, change and adjust it, either to their strengths or their weaknesses, you know? Because people have their strengths and weaknesses. So you play on that, find ways to make them uncomfortable. Where they are comfortable, make them uncomfortable. And where they're not comfortable, you pressure onto that, you know? So just playing around, call it omni.
You got any fighters from history or still fighting now that kind of inspire you?
Yeah, my number one was John Jones. I mean, after my first session, I remember guys in the gym were speaking about Jones at the time. I think he had a fight coming up, and I went home and I studied him and I watched some of his finishes, like all the spinning stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
I got all of his fights up, and in a day I watched all of his fights up until that point, back to back. And then I was just at home, like, practicing these moves. And I'd go into the gym and practice them. Also, you can't do the elbow, so I had to turn it into a back fist, accommodate it for amateur. But I was just playing around with all these different moves. Anderson Silva as well, one of my favorites. And then Demetrius Johnson as well, his style, very
love
creative.
Demetrius Johnson as well, yeah.
And there's a lot. And then just as it went on, more fighters that I recognize. Khabib as well, for his pressure and style and his grappling now. I appreciate him more so now. I know more. And of course, Mark, but I just like to pick and then put certain things in my pocket from each person, even from, like I said, my opponents. If I like something, I take it off of them.
You know what's wonderful is Mark in particular. It's my son. He's been doing it 4 or 5 years now. And the first time I showed him Mark's fights, he was like, what? He couldn't believe it. And you know, absolutely couldn't believe. Like, I guess because he's quite non, he's kind of like an unassuming guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, but, yeah, and after your spinning finish, all my son was doing all through the house was just spinning back elbow, spinning back fist, just, you know.
I think you say that, actually. Yeah.
So he's 11, he's 12 this weekend. So yeah, he's absolutely loves it. And he wants to do it. I guess the wonderful thing with you and with Mark and people like that is you're showing people that they can do it. And he's looking at you. And of course, as a parent, you know, I asked the question about your mum. As a parent, I'm like, okay. You know, you want to be a fighter? Like, you know, how do I feel about that? He says he wants to do that now. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. You know, there's going to be zero pressure, but kids will hopefully see in you, or people will see in you, oh, I can do that. You know, I could, you know. And did you ever think you'd be in a position where you are kind of inspiring to people?
No, No, because obviously I have my focuses. I don't really think of the kind of like the secondary that would have. But yeah, if it has a positive effect, then
it undoubtedly will.
Yeah,
undoubtedly will. You know, I see it, I hear it. You know, he's not said it so much, but you know, I think he'd be quite inspired by, or is quite inspired by, what you're doing right now. It's not just fighters though that I guess possibly inspire you. Basketball, presumably as well.
Yeah, definitely. Who? When I was playing ball, it was of course LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, for different things, each of them. Kobe was more so the mindset towards training. He's very disciplined. He's a very like no nonsense type of character, especially in his training. Like, you hear stories, not he wouldn't tell the stories, players would tell the stories of how kind of if he's in the room, you don't go half-hearted because he'd get onto you. Really? You know, he'd be in there like swearing at people, saying this, and it's
expectation of performance
beyond. And he'd be there early before anybody else is there. He'd be leaving later, you know, putting up shot. LeBron was more for the dominant, the way he just go in there on the rim, dunk on the rim. Just the way he tear through people, nobody could stop him. You know, people would try to, but they'd either get put on the floor, bodied on the floor, or they get like dunked on. But yeah, just again, Kobe more like was more skilled and technical. Yeah, I took aspects from both of them, you know. You just take it where you see a different thing. Another one of my favorite players was Derrick Rose as well. Crazy athletic, very dominant as well. And he's a small guy, so he wasn't actually, he's like my height, which is classed as a small.
So I know, it's mad, isn't it, when you think about it? Yeah, because like, everybody else talks about like Scottie Pippen was short, wasn't he like, isn't he like 6'3"?
No, he was like 6'5", I think.
Is he? Is he really?
Yeah, 6'5",
okay.
6'6".
Yeah, because I remember when I, like you can't see, but you're wearing the Bulls slider.
Well, oh, Project Rock.
They're Project Rock, of course they are. Exactly, of course they are. But it looks like the Bulls, right? But I remember when I was a kid, it's so embarrassing, but I love D17. You probably don't even know who they are. Just like a pop group, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a guy in there, Brian Harvey, and I remember he just always wore Chicago Bulls stuff. So I was what? 10, 11, you know, doesn't know. So I'd, you know, I was like, yeah, no, I love basketball now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, you know, just because, yeah, no, me too.
Because he's wearing it, yeah.
Yeah, because he's wearing it. So, you know, I'm watching, that was when it was Scottie Pippen and, you know, and Jordan and all that.
I'd have loved to see that.
It was all good stuff. I was a massive fan. My brother, he's 9 years younger than me, my youngest brother. So he was like 3 months premature. So like my mum was like, you know, not in a great place, but she was like asking for names and stuff. And he's called Jordan, because I was like, I know, what about Jordan? Do you know? And like, obviously, I'm not saying that I named him, but I definitely threw the idea out there. In UFC, who would you say, I guess you got your Khabib, so we mentioned him a few times, like who else would you say is that kind of, you know,
Jones,
once in a generation?
John Jones.
His ability to go up and down weight classes. And still dominate.
He just did a heavyweight.
Yeah, he did.
Nobody's done that.
No.
Cyril.
Like, it's phenomenal.
First fight back after, what, 2-3 years out? Say, Anderson Silva was up there. Adesanya as well. He's obviously still 100%. Writing the story, but...
I don't know the ins and outs of it, but like Ngannou?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, he's definitely...
Like, it's frustrating that he's not in and around.
Still in the UFC. Yeah.
I don't know what's going on there. And as I say, I'm sure I could look it up. And my friend who knows everything about UFC is probably screaming if he's listening to this, saying, you know, it's because of this, you idiot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just like, that is a monster. That is this phenomenally athletic freak talent. And we want to see it.
Like,
as a spectator, as a lover of the sport, like, I want to see you dominate too. You know, that's the thing. And I've got zero doubt. When you first stepped in that octagon, like, was it, didn't you cartwheel in?
Yeah.
That was your first thing you did, right?
Yeah.
A one-handed spring and so,
yeah.
I love it. This is mine.
It's like, yeah, just having fun with it again.
You felt at home.
Yeah, yes. Weirdly so. I know that when I had my amateur debut and when I had my pro debut, I felt more comfortable with my UFC debut. Because I think you've had that picture in your mind for so long that you're almost there already. So when you get there, it's like, feels familiar almost. It's a weird feeling.
That's really strange.
It's
like,
at home.
I guess I can't relate to that.
I'm here now. Like, it's time. As Bruce Buffer says, it's time.
It's time. You know? Do you have people down the line, like in a year, 2 years, 3 years, that you think, okay, that'd be a good matchup?
Yeah, definitely. I would say either end of this year, start of next year, I want to be starting to break into the top 15, top 10 by next year.
What do you reckon? So this fight in June, think you'll fight again this year?
Yeah, definitely. At least once more. Ideally, two more.
What would that make it? Four?
Four this year. There's an event in London again, July 22nd.
Oh. Okay, sweet. July?
Yeah, it's close.
You're thinking of fighting like 6 weeks after?
If I come out healthy, I don't see why not.
Yeah. That's fair.
If it goes well and I'm healthy, then yeah, definitely. And there's...
Is it back at the O2?
Yeah, the O2 again. It's a fight night this time. And in October, there's an event in Abu Dhabi.
Right, wow. So
that'd be nice.
They still got Fight Island?
Jump on there. Yeah. Still got it happening.
I loved how every other sport, everything else fell away. Dana White was like, no, I'm finding a way. I'm finding a way forward. And, you know, made it happen. I mean, it was the only sport happening. And did you watch any of it?
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah.
It's the only thing that was on.
Yeah, it's the only thing that was on. Absolutely crazy to hear just to hear it. Do you know what I mean? Everything the fighters are saying to each other, every like leg check, like, you know, is like a busted shoe. Yeah. You're like, you hear it all. All the coaches, exactly that. There was something really powerful about it. And as you said, there wasn't much else going on. So nothing else to feel kind of strongly passionate about competitively. So that was, did a phenomenal job. In your first fight?
Dusko, yeah.
It ended in a very... in a way that nobody expected. Do you want to talk us through it?
Yeah, very anti-climactic.
So you're there. I'm home. This is it. I'm in the UFC. Yeah.
And then the balloon just burst. Felt good in there. As I said, the fight at home, exchanging with him, just finding my feet. And we entered the clinch against the cage and turned off from the cage. And just as I was kind of rotating to try and take him down, like with a body lock, I heard him like, He shouted in pain, basically, and he dropped to the floor. And I was, as he fell, I was thinking like, what could have even happened?
Nothing,
here? It's not like I slammed him or tried to submit him. He just collapsed, and he's just holding his knee. And I was like, just over him, just thinking, nah, this can't be happening. There's so many thoughts in my head. This can't be happening because it's a win, but it's not the win I wanted, and it's not the impression I wanted. I wanted to make a good impression, obviously, my debut. But yeah, so
it's memorable.
It's out of our hands. Yeah.
It's a memorable one.
Definitely is. It looked like ACL watching it, which is not the best of injuries. But yeah, wish him.
I mean, you threw a few leg kicks, didn't you? And
yeah, I did. But the leg kicks were landing on his opposite.
But do you think? Okay.
So maybe had a
pre-existing injury. Yeah. Just trying to fight through it.
Mm. And it went.
So on that note, you came out and you thought, okay, you know, right, that was weird. Your journalist questions and your answers were basically, you know, yeah, that's not exactly what I wanted, but you know, like we keep moving, right?
Yeah,
and you'd also had a really weird one with your last fight in the Cage Warriors.
Yeah, with Jesse Taylor. He was, at that point, it was probably the most experienced fighter on the planet. He's been around for years. He had an accident the night before the fight. After we weighed in, everything's set, good to go. He must have been out in the evening, gone for a walk just because of the jet lag from the States. So I think he came over a few days before and he just went for a walk in the evening. And of course, the traffic is the opposite. So he's looking the opposite way for the traffic. And the car hits him in the opposite direction, walks into the road. He said, I think he said that he hit the floor, felt his arm, but wasn't anything too serious. And the car sped off, went to the hospital, got checked out.
Jesus, the car drove off, did it?
The car disappeared. Went to the hospital, got it checked out. They said it's nothing too serious, but there's no way he's going to be able to fight on it. So the fight got, cancelled. Got called off there and there. New Year's Eve as well.
Of course it was. Yeah, New Year's Eve. So you've just been told you've just been told this is happening. You've just been told, right, the fight's off. This was your second mandatory defense of the belt?
Yeah, that's right.
In your mind, you couldn't move. You know, UFC weren't coming calling until you'd had that second fight, right? So how were you feeling about it the second you were told?
So actually how we got told was that morning of the fight, Mark got a call. So we were all in the same hotel room and it was Graham. And as soon as he looked at me.
Graham being?
The Cage Warriors owner and also manager. He got a call from Graham. I could see on Mark's face, he looked at me and I was like, who's that? He's like, Graham. So he said, Graham. My heart started again. My heart's beating now. I've just woke up, man. I woke up to the phone call.
Right. Okay.
The phone ringing. So my heart's beating. The phone's ringing. Mark's answered. I'm facing another way, still asleep, basically. And then when I heard Graham, I turn around and I'm like what's he saying? And then we went down to the boardroom, which is where like the Cage Warriors were set up. Yeah, he came out of the boardroom and I could see that there was a doctor sat down on the chair. In the corner was Jesse, but I couldn't see him behind the door. But I seen the doctor. And then when he walked out, and I walked back up the way in the corridor while he was speaking to Mark. And I come back down, and I was just like shaking my head.
You knew something was there.
It has to be. There's no way he's calling us at that time in the morning. It was around 8 o'clock. And then we went into a side room and he came in with Ian Dean, who's the matchmaker, Cage Warriors matchmaker, like his right-hand man, essentially. And it was me, Dan, and Mark in the room with them. And then he said, I've got some news for you. Jesse's been involved in an accident last night, and explained exactly as I explained to you what happened. And then he said, but every cloud's got a silver lining. And he said, you're 99% sure going to be fighting on this UFC card in March. So it was very mixed.
So hang on, so like he told you like about Jesse, you know, being in that the accident, and then like 30 seconds later.
30 seconds later.
So you're like, you're trying to process
in
that.
The same
like,
breath.
Oh no, I need to, because then did you start thinking, right, this pushes my timeline back, this changes things.
When he's saying that, I'm thinking this is gonna, yeah, exactly, it's gonna push things back for UFC potentially. Yeah. I'm thinking the worst. I'm like, no. Then he's like, but 90% sure you're going to be fighting UFC. So I'm like,
what?
And I'm like, but no, but I'm not fighting. But I'm fighting the UFC, but I'm not fighting today. So I was like excited about that. But then I was kind of broken that I couldn't fight, perform that night. We went to the fights and even watching them, I was like, oh, I wish I could have been in here now.
But you were ready for it. You've been through camp, right? That's the thing.
Yeah.
At that time, you know, like X months work into, you know, into being the best you can possibly be at that moment. You know, you've sacrificed for that. You've no doubt eaten nothing but exactly what you should be eating.
Over Christmas as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So even worse.
Yeah.
Everybody's got these big roast dinners. And I'm a South Africa.
So you've just got a chicken breast.
That's it. No gravy. Nothing. Yeah. Veg.
No, that's... But I mean, that's the thing. It's the life of a fighter, isn't it? To sacrifice. It's the life of an athlete to sacrifice. So it's completely normal at this point, I guess. But so you've just been told you're going to the UFC. I just had to bring that out because just for people listening or watching that don't know your route to inevitably where you're going, it was that ended Cage Warriors, but then started UFC. And then your first UFC fight ends the way it does.
Yeah.
And I think you're just like, do you know what? I just want a normal fight. Can I not just have a normal, hopefully, June? That's going to be, all going to go exactly as we want it to go, which is, I don't know, like, what are you doing? Like some sort of flying kick into some backflip kick. Do you remember Tekken?
Yeah.
Do you remember Tekken?
Me and Calvin were played out all
backflip
the time.
Kick, martial
all
law.
All the time,
I'll see that. Get practicing. I know you can backflip because wasn't you showed me a video of you going to gymnastics for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And within like no time, you were there tumbling.
Yeah.
You were there round off into a back. And I'm like, who does that? Like, I was like, you have a backflip before? No,
I haven't, not there. Just pick things up, man. There's no fear in it. You just have to.
So that's what I want to see, all right? That's what I want to see. Don't tell Mark that we said that. But the backflip, just keep spamming it. So hopefully you get a normal fight. You get just, you know, everything goes both your ways in terms of the prep and, you know, and you both get in there. It's exciting for me. It's exciting for, obviously, you know, by extension, you know, the people around me and your family. And, you know, but it is because I think sometimes where we're from, Gloucester, it gets kind of a bad rap. It's kind of known for a couple of things. Bread West and Rose West, not ideal.
Yeah.
Rugby.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And cheese rolling. Right? That's this weekend, right? I just think that we as a city, though, we've got so many incredible people doing great things. You know, so many people that are possibly not shone a spotlight on like they could be. Obviously, I count you in that. You know, the fact, it blows my mind that you walk around and, you know, Cage Warriors middleweight champion, UFC fighter, and it will happen. Not yet. Will somebody go, oh, that's, you know, I want people whispering going, is that Christian? Is that Christian? It'll happen. You watch. You know, you'll be out for a run and people will be like, I know that guy, you know. And I think we need to try and find, you know, as a city, kind of pride in the people that, you know, put us on the map in a good way.
Yeah.
I really believe that. And, you know, yes, you know, we talked about Mark quite a lot, but, you know, he's fundamental. You know, I think he's, you know, he's in the city's DNA. I mean, you spend 10 seconds talking to the guy and it's like, oh, Gloucester.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you feel about the city? Obviously you still live here. You've been away to Bristol. You're traveling the world now with fighting. What are your thoughts in terms of Gloucester and where we are?
Now I've travelled a lot, I realise how small Gloucester actually is. But for a small city, there's a lot going on, surprisingly. There's a lot of talent within the small community. Very supportive as well, even from my amateur days. A lot of support coming through, especially now I'm on a bigger stage. Still a lot of support. Because it's such a small city, it's not often that we have people in whatever area excelling in that area.
I guess, you know, I look at it and I think, you know, we're a, you know, we are, as you said, that smaller city, but you know, with like a real underdog mentality.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know how I think of Rocky Balboa and I think of Philadelphia and you think of like, okay, so this isn't New York City. This isn't this isn't Los Angeles. This is gritty.
This is it.
And I think, you know, I love the idea of, you know, just the people that we get, you know, coming out of this city, doing things exactly like that. And they've all got a great story to tell. You know, in a place where, you know, especially compared to like the Cotswolds and Cheltenham, which are just next door, there's just not the money here that there is in, you know, some of those other places. And it hardens you. Do you know what I mean? That kind of fighter's mentality.
Definitely, like you said, the grit. Even March Gym, it's the grit of the gym, you know. It's not like it's the most flash gym where everybody's there to train. You know, it brings everybody, people that do come and stay, they're there to train, you know. Yeah.
You know, we just need to celebrate our, you know, celebrate the people here just that bit more. And you know, I think we are good at it, but the spotlight needs to be shone. Is anybody going out to Vegas to watch?
I think Calvin might be coming. But with this event, it's at the Apex. Right. So it's a bit more like behind closed doors, quite intimate. The prices are stupid. I would like them to come out there. But I would usually get tickets to give to your friends and family, but they're not doing it for this event for that reason.
Because it's how like many people will be?
Size. I think it's under 100 people that fit in there.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's really intimate, isn't it? Jesus.
Exactly. Yeah. Usually you get like the more like A-list celebrities and stuff coming.
Okay. So you're going to be rubbing shoulders with?
Potentially see who's there.
Amazing.
Yeah, it would be good. I think maybe later on I could work something, but for now, I don't really have much weight to pull, you know. So fresh in the game.
I mean, on that note, from a marketability perspective, you are, you know, you're very real. As I say, you know, there's not this kind of grandstanding, not this, you know, I'm going to shout and make my voice heard. You know, you let your fighting do the talking, definitely. And then I was going to say sensitive. I think you are. But, you know, like, you know, in terms of, you know, like when being interviewed afterwards, you know, you're thoughtful, you're articulate. It's not, you know, it's not like, you know, grabbing the mic and, you know, calling people out and that sort of thing yet.
Yeah.
You know, with that being said, those louder people do get heard, do build followers. You know, sometimes they pull fights or, you know, pull eyeballs because of that, right? But that's just not you. I correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, I don't feel like you're ever going to get to that stage as an athlete, as a person. And even beyond UFC, you know, we've spoken briefly about, you know, it doesn't stop. It doesn't, you know, it begins here. This isn't the end. You know, there's so much more you want to do. But, you know, how do you find in that marketing yourself or that kind of Christian Leroy Duncan as a brand? Like, you know, is it weird for you?
No, I wouldn't say weird. As I say, I'm my own person, my own character. I'm not that loud person that you said is going to be calling people out. That's not me, you know, that's true to myself. But again, I think it's just a different kind of avenue. People have their own avenues. This is mine.
I think there's room for it, I really do.
I think there's
room for some humility.
I think more so in MMA, it's not common, but in sports, like, I think I come from basketball, so it's not very, like, brute and brash, you know, like the way people are on the mic, very respectful, they don't swear, they don't cuss, you know, they show respect to their, obviously, rival teammates and whatever. Obviously, you have your rivalries and they talk about it. I think because I came from that, that's been me anyway, and I carried it into this sport too. You're just not familiar with it in the sport right now. Boxing is a bit more so. Again, that's coming more with the MMA, the bruteness of MMA. Wrestling is all talk.
Oh, of course.
You know how that is.
UFC and WWE are now owned by the same company,
aren't they? Yeah, they are.
So, you know, I wonder, I've no idea how that's going to change things, you know.
I think it's a positive though.
I think so. You know, I think bring some of that kind of, you know, huge thinking that WWE has always had. And I mean, UFC has always had that big thinking as well. There's definitely exciting. Do you think fighters are paid what they are worth?
With the payment, obviously, if you come in, they don't know how you're going to get on. After 3 fights, if you're performing well, then you're going to start getting paid more at the right money. I think, like you said, it's what you're worth. Because Conor McGregor, he's getting paid. He's not complaining about what he's getting paid.
No, he's not.
You know? Yeah. So, like you said, I think it just comes to what you're worth.
It's you give quite literally blood, sweat and tears to it, you know, for months pre-fight, you know, you really put yourself through the ringer. You do sacrifice a lot. You know, some fighters have come out and said, you know, we don't think we're being paid enough, basically, haven't they?
Yeah. It's understandable. But again, once you're in that top, you know, percent, then in the UFC, then you're going to be paid. You're going to be looked after.
Did you practice Ramadan this year?
Yeah, I did actually.
Yeah. How's that during a camp?
It's tough, man. It's tough. Especially leading up to the event. But you just make things work. It's mainly for the discipline. I've been doing it for the past 3 years. I've done it. But it's for the discipline and for the health benefits as well. Just knowing that you can put yourself through that and still carry on. But it was tough, man. The training, you have sometimes don't have energy. You have to manage your energy.
I can't imagine how hard that is.
Your body adjusts after a week or so. But yeah. It's difficult, man.
And you came to that by your girlfriend, right?
Yeah, my partner. Out of respect and just for the fact of trying, I thought.
As a challenge almost to yourself.
Yeah. And a lot of my close friends as well, they obviously grew up practicing. So I thought, just try it out. And it was good, man. It was an experience.
Would you say you were a Muslim? Do you just practice aspects of?
Not officially. I haven't taken my Shahada, which is essentially your oath that you take to become Muslim. Still learning a lot. My friends showing me like how to practice and the teachings. But I respect a lot of the teachings as well. It's more so for the discipline.
Were you religious before this?
No.
Eyes open to this.
I'm very open to
curiosity.
Exactly. Same way when I come into MMA, just curious. Because I'm always willing to learn, listen to what people got to say. It's more of that aspect, you know. Just I always like learning and understanding things. See, I've started to learn some languages as well.
Yeah, you would say, tell me about that.
So, some of my closest friends that I grew up with, that I've known for a long time as well. Obviously, Gloucester being very multicultural, you've got different, obviously, religions, ethnicities, backgrounds. And obviously, some of my close friends speak different languages. And one of my close friends speaks a language called Urdu, which is spoken in Pakistan mainly. So I started learning Urdu. First, I learned the alphabet, so I can read it, I can write it. And then I learned to speak as well, so I practice. A lot of people in Gloucester, a lot of the shops here, some of the few places they speak. So I practice, going to the shop and practice, like, ordering my food and speaking to them. And you can tell they're thinking,
okay.
How do you know, where are you from? How do you know that?
Amazing.
I said that from here, from Gloucester. They're like, but where are you from? Like, how do you know this? How do you know this? It's interesting to be able to speak to people and share.
So if you get a Russian mate, all of a sudden you're there.
Chinese mate.
You're going to be like speak the most languages of anybody in Gloucester just because you're like, I met a guy.
Just chat to them, man. And you can see you get more of an interaction from people as well when you speak their own.
Oh, 100%. I think, I guess as a... as a nation, we're terrible at it.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we go everywhere and you just, the expectation is, you're going to speak English.
Yeah, exactly.
That's impressive. And again, it speaks to, for you, I think, just that curiosity. You're like, okay, there's something to learn. I need to learn it. And that's fascinating. I think with this podcast, and in fact, the whole reason I've wanted to do this, it is, although it's called The Starting Line, it's to talk about where people came from, and we all start from somewhere. Yeah. And, it's to talk about the highs and lows and, success and motivation and drive and all those things. It is also intellectual curiosity. Let me, I don't know that thing. I don't know anything about that thing. Exactly. And I love that. But, I love feeling like I'm right at the beginning. Right at the beginning of a journey or something. And it seems like you kind of have that kind of mentality.
It's a challenge again. It's a challenge.
It's been, honestly, man, a pleasure.
I really appreciate you having me on here.
Appreciated this. It's great. So thank you so much for coming on.
Pleasure, man.
And there we have it. Christian Leroy Duncan. Just a genuinely lovely human being that gets in an octagon and punches people for a living. So the second one of those that does that from Gloucester that we've had on the Starting On podcast. And I'm really proud to bring their stories to you. I think it's important that we support and celebrate. If we can all be positive, if we can all get behind people trying to do great things, positivity begets positivity, as wanky as that sounds. Ah, God. All right, throw that to one side. If you want to follow Christian, you can follow him on Instagram at Christian Leroy Duncan, where if you go to his reels, you'll see a video of him flipping around like it's nothing. Like this guy, he's never done anything gymnastic, and yet here he is backflipping for fun, spins, twists. So I cannot wait to see him bring that just athletic ability into his next fights. He's already, as we said, done it in terms of cage warriors, and he's not really had the chance to show that yet in UFC. So hopefully when it comes to the fight in November, so that is November the 18th in Las Vegas, he can really, really show what he's all about. Again, you can follow us, Starting Line Show, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Starting Line Podcast on Facebook. Find out more, startinglinepod.com.
email us hello@startinglinepod.com. It is always, always lovely to hear from you. And I was told recently that I need to give more of myself. I've had a few people say that. They say, you know, guests are great, chat from you's average, but people have said, you know, it'd be good to know more about you. So I don't know. It's always a bit weird. Just, you know, it's written, you know, I've written bits about my background, my upbringing, things that I've achieved, whatnot. If you go to the podcast description, you'll see some stuff. But yeah, maybe I'll speak to it a little bit more over time, I guess. You know, I think about the podcasts I like and I go back for the host as well as the guests. So I might start posting a tiny bit more on social media that's not just plugs for each episode. And I don't know. I'm working this out. I'm making it up as I go along every day, just like I always have done with the business. And that seems to have done pretty well. Continues to surprise me, the kind of weird and wonderful things in PR that, you know, we can get paid to do and have fun doing it. So also, I guested on a podcast this week called Hardcore Listing. That's Hardcore Listing. And I'm on there talking about my top five favorite PR stunts. So if you want to listen to me talk nonsense and be silly with the hosts, Stu Whiffen and Chris Glasson, two guys actually I already knew of, because as a longtime listener of Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces, they've cropped up in quite a few of the drunk casts. And it always gets silly, always gets messy. And yeah, it felt like chatting to friends, which was very, very nice. They also do other podcasts. Stu is the host of the MMA Fan Podcast. So if you've listened to this and like this, go and give that a listen. He co-hosts with Blake Harrison, who was Neil on The Inbetweeners. And he's also the editor of Pod Bible Magazine. That's podbiblemag.com, which is kind of a magazine for podcasters and anybody that loves podcasting. So yeah, lovely chat. Go and have a listen. All that needs to be said, good luck to Christian for November the 18th. And thank you very much. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.